Please be seated. Wise Nicodemus saw such light as made him know his God by night. Oh, for that night where I and him might live invisible and dim. Faith finds freedom in disappointment. Faith uncovers freedom in the twilight of disappointment. We are a people whose culture languishes in the doldrums of a pervasive disappointment. Let the word go forth that this is broad, perhaps not universal, shared, perhaps not quite by all, relational, social, technological, a cultural malaise and disappointment across division. Left and right, conservative, liberal, donkey, elephant. This lachrymose loss is shared by, not by all, it's not universal, but it is our condition, our time, our twilight moment. Recall the words of ancient writ, Holy Scripture. There is a luminous moonlight at night. Faith finds freedom in disappointment. The heavens are telling the glory of God, sunlight. The firmament proclaims God's handiwork, moonlight. Day to day pours forth speech, sunlight. Night to night declareth knowledge, moonlight. You could walk with me, properly dressed for the winter, across a moonlit moonscape of snow, lying upon a corn-stubbled field, the moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave the luster of midday to objects below. If I say, let only the darkness cover me, and the light about me be as night, even the darkness is not dark to thee. The night is as bright as the day, for darkness is as light with thee. There is moonlight at night. You need to train your eyes to see a little differently. John is the twilight gospel. You know, there are three lectionary years, the process of reading the texts. There are four gospels. Matthew has his year this year. Luke has his year last year. Mark has his year next year. And John, well, we grew up in a cottage with three children's beds and four children, and one was always out on the porch in the moonlight, and there he is, John, outside. We have him only now and then, here in the middle of January, to help guide us in interpreting Matthew. No easy task. Matthew's been in the freezer for 2,000 years, so when you bring him out to serve him, you might not want only to let it thaw and serve it raw. It needs to be seasoned, touched, cooked, or there could be less than positive consequences. John is no stranger to darkness. It's a dark gospel. Concludes with Thomas and the disciples in the dark in a room. It begins with the light of the first chapter, piercing the darkness, continues through Nicodemus, who knew his Lord by night. The darkest chapters of rhetoric in the New Testament are 7 and 8 in John. And then that beautiful, glorious, like no other set of verses, chapters 14 to 17. And then the Passion, all dark. John knows twilight, and so do you. We are living in a twilight moment. From our reading today, the one word to recall is revelation. In John, the gospel is not so much prophecy fulfilled as it is mystery revealed. John knew disappointment. And what was his disappointment? The greatest of sorts of disappointment. John and his community were disappointed by Jesus. To that point in the New Testament, Paul and Mark and Matthew and Luke, hanging on for dear life, held to the primitive church's greatest treasure, pearl hidden in a field, a pearl of great price, the soon and very soon return of the Lord. Some standing here will not taste death until they see him. We, the living, shall be caught up together with him. Paul, Mark, Matthew, Luke. But two generations and more later, only John sits down by a river in Babylon, say, and weeps and says, what we once taught is wrong. What we once thought is not right. The Lord is not coming anytime soon. And the gospel is not, the end is near. The gospel is, the Lord is here. Not parousia, but paraclete. Not Armageddon, but the artistry of every day. Not speculation, but spirit. And not the hour is coming. The hour is coming, and now is. Right in the marrow of that disappointment, the greatest of theological losses, John's community discovered the gift of freedom. Faith finds freedom in disappointment. That's the given gift of faith in the Gospel of John. And so they were able to look around and see what was there. And so the text today says, come and see. And what was revealed? Christ. Present. Love. The freeing, not the freedom of the will, the freeing of the will that some will hear as the slight distinction between Pelagius and Augustine. The freeing of the will for love and service in the divine presence this and every hour. Did you open all your Christmas gifts? Because there's one, I think, that's still there. It's wrapped nicely. Have you opened it, cherished it? Faith is a gift that allows freedom in the heart, the very marrow of disappointment. So the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world, we hear that once a month at Eucharist, so we think it's common in the Bible. It's only found here. So the naming of some disciples. So John the Baptist, not here named, just John, but that is the Baptist, who identifies Christ, who is not baptized in John. John is very different. Here Jesus does not stoop to be baptized, but stands, say, present, say, in Ephesus, say, in the year 90, say, four dozen of various ages, say, in a borrowed upper room, and candlelight and prayer and communion and a word, and then an antiphonal singing. I am the vine, I am the vine, I am the door, I am the door, I am the way, I am the way, I am the truth, I am the truth, I am the light. John's community had an experience of the presence of God. That's why we come to church, to receive that gift of faith that frees us, even not later, not before, not above, not below, but right in the teeth of disappointment. Our moment is one of full disappointment, not universal, but shared. For some, it's more outcome. For some, it's more options. Speaking of the year gone by, for some it's more rhetoric, for some it's more process, but at least this we share, a kind of disappointment. And if we're not careful, that disappointment can curdle into anxiety and depression, anger and fear, acedia and ennui. So we need to hear the gospel together and watch in the moonlight, train your eyes for what we learn and see under the lesser light. Not the greater light to rule the day, but the lesser light to rule the night. And what do you see? You tell me. What do you see in this luminous twilight? There's a lot of light at night, but it's different. We see that we, as a people, tend to see what we expect to see and what we want to see. How are all those pollsters from last year? How is Sam Wang today? We see what we want to see. We see that we have a penchant for and a sweet tooth for entertainment, no matter how it's robed or shaped. We see that we learn again that big, unexpected, bad things can happen in real time to collective and individual lives, as if those who were with us at Exeter and Boylston in April of 2013 needed any reminder. We see that the lingering shadow of race and sex lasts long beyond emancipation and suffrage, and so the luminosity yesterday across the country, including here, some of you we saw along the Commonwealth Mall. Wasn't that the point of looking for some light together? We see in the twilight that we have neglected our reading of Reinhold Niebuhr. With all respect to this pulpit, the School of Theology, and the Department of Religion, for the past decade, the rendering of Reinhold Niebuhr has been left to Andrew Bacevich in the School of International Relations. And he shouldn't be the only one who has a copy of and has read in the last 5 years Niebuhr's Irony of American History. We see, speaking of history, that our vision of history is dim, our knowledge of history is limited, our grasp of history is weak, and our appreciation for history is lower than it should be. Such then the celebration of Monday past, when through the auspices of our Dean of Students, for 2.5 hours, we heard your story, Marsh Chapel, Boston University, of Martin Luther King, in Big Band and Duke Ellington, in Marsh's own Inner Strength Gospel Choir, in tap dance and speech, and in a gathering across the community to remember who we are and whose we are. This is a must-be moment for us each year. And speaking of which, we see there is a twilight disappointment shared across the board that social location truly matters. It matters where you place yourself for prayer and worship, for song and devotion, for volunteering, for voting. It really matters where you locate yourself in society and time and history. And we see the importance of gathering as well. There's a power in gathering, being together, seeing others of different aspect and orientation, sensing a common purpose. That's largely what coming to church is all about, isn't it? There we have a twilight landscape. You tell me what you have seen now in the moonlight. But it's not just collective. We also individually know about disappointment. Why, in fact, we have our own accounts. Every heart has secret sorrows. We have a sense of disappointment. That job that you knew was meant for you, but it went elsewhere. That relationship at age 19 that you just knew would go on for another 40 years, and it didn't. That business or partnership or marriage in which you placed 33 decades of life, and then by the river of Babylon, we sat down and wept. Here is the thing about disappointment. According to the gospel, when it is faced squarely, when it is admitted honestly, when it is endured faithfully, not alone, but in community, then by grace, faith finds freedom right in the heart of disappointment. There's a film, I am told, out that tells the story of a young man whose disappointments gradually, painstakingly, lead to an experience of freedom. And we see it in our own lives. How little, compared to what we should, we honor those who are willing to lose in an election. How much more we need to account for those across the board who are willing to stand and not be honored. Winning isn't always succeeding, and losing isn't always failure. So in your loss and in your disappointment, or in another's of low or high or highest office, after a while, in disappointment, you might just dust yourself off and put your chin up and keep your head high and move forward, and you can say to others, I did what I could for you. You know who I am. You had your chance. I did what I could for you. You know who I am. You had your chance. And then, who knows, there was, I think, if I remember, back in 1980, there was some president from Georgia who had a mixed success in the office and then became the most successful ex-president the country has ever seen, still at it. I remember in 1980, another not from Georgia, but from Tennessee. He'd spent a year in divinity school. Maybe that helped. He won the popular vote but lost the election, and he went on to something bigger and better and greater, an inconvenient truth, taking on all of the cosmos. One of the happiest evenings of our decade here at Boston University was a small table set some years ago by Vita Palladino at the Howard Gottlieb Center, and a dinner, the supper hour, with John L. Lewis, whose own skull had been cracked in the Edmund Pettus Bridge in 1965, and who went on to this day, how proud we are of him, to live and serve. Faith finds freedom in disappointment. Faith is the freeing of heart and soul for love and service. And you know, in your loss, you may get a letter. It's an imaginary one. It's our sermon. We can imagine the envelope as we want. We'll open it up here. And it says, in your time of disappointment, dear friend, you know, it seems to me that I could be wrong, but what you didn't get, you're not so much denied as spared. You're not so much denied as spared. Faith finds freedom in and through disappointment. So Unamuno was so right. Truly, we do not know when we have succeeded. The heavens are telling the glory of God. That's daylight. The firmament proclaims God's handiwork. That's moonlight. Day to day pours forth speech. Night to night declares knowledge. In the moonlight, there's a luminosity that will teach and tell us something we can't otherwise say. So if you are on a cold corn stubble, snow blanketed field, maybe you're tired of the north, let's go south. It's our imagination. We'll go down to Daytona Beach. You can take off your shoes and you can wander in the sand, and the light on that white sand is going to light up the sky. To the left, the sun's gone down, no mistaking that. Dark sky, dark horizon, dark, dark ocean over your left shoulder. And on your right, rising up, for the purposes of this sermon, it's a clear sky and a full moon shining down upon you. And maybe you're remembering Howard Thurman. If you memorize one of his lines, let this be it. He wrote, "Walking the beach in the moonlight." The ocean and the night surrounded my little life with a reassurance that could not be affronted by any human behavior. The ocean at night gave me a sense of timelessness, of existing beyond the ebb and flow of circumstance. Death would be a small thing, I felt, in the sweep of that natural embrace. Hear the good news. Faith finds freedom in disappointment. Faith discovers the freeing of the will in twilight. Wise Nicodemus, who saw such light that made him know his God by night, oh, for that night, where I in him might live invisible and dim.